Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
The Illegal Curve Wasteland.
A lot of people would say that this is a radio wasteland, but that's a separate issue altogether. Welcome back to the program. 8:30 in the morning on this Saturday, the 18th of February. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com in Toronto, he covers the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're pleased to welcome to the program David Alter. David, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. David, the Jets and the Leafs, they're going to do battle for the second time coming up on Tuesday night. We know that the first one was a tremendously dramatic game, Laine getting his first career hat trick as the Jets come back to stun the Maple Leafs on home ice here in Winnipeg. Coming up Tuesday, it's the rematch between the Leafs and the Jets, or between Matthews and Laine. How much hype do you think that game is going to get in Toronto? Is it going to be a real battle for the Calder Trophy played out in the pages of the newspaper on Tuesday night?
You know what? I think it would have. It will still have that same kind of shine, but I think a lot of it's going to depend on if Mitch Marner is in the lineup at that point or not. We're still waiting for an update on him. Obviously, there's a lot of focus on Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine. I mean, I was at that game in Winnipeg early in the season when Laine got a hat trick and the whole debate started up, and those two have been certainly exciting to watch, but Mitch Marner still leads in points, if I recall, even after the Laine hat trick the other night.
They're so tied now.
Oh, they are tied now. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough call. I mean, it will be a fun game to watch. Between those two, I don't think that one's going to decide it at all. But certainly a lot of Leaf fans right now are just kind of on pins and needles about this Mitch Marner thing, because in Toronto, the way the fan base works, everything's good until something happens, and the Leafs have been very good without injury. And Austin Matthews has been pretty good, but what's allowed them to have this success that no one expected them to have is that they can carry lines with all the rookies that they have spread out. And if they don't have that, that's more attention to Austin Matthews, which mitigates Toronto's chances of doing some real damage. So the one-on-one battle between Laine versus Matthews kind of gets dulled a little bit, at least from a Toronto perspective.
Now, Dave, you mentioned Mitch Marner's injury, and you know, for our listeners who aren't aware of what happened, he collided with Boone Jenner on Wednesday night when the Leafs were playing the Columbus Blue Jackets. Are we going to find out later today if he's going to play against the Ottawa Senators? And is there a chance that this is maybe a little bit more severe than we originally thought?
Well, I think we'll find out momentarily if he's going to play against the Senators tonight or not. But in terms of his long-term or short-term status, that's something the Maple Leafs under Lou Lamoriello have been very, very dodgy about. It's funny. Anytime there's any sort of injury, the update we get from Coach Mike Babcock is always, well, day-to-day means it could be 10 days, it could be less, it could be more. I don't know. That's almost a stock answer he gives at this point for those. They're saying day-to-day right now. That's good news for the Maple Leafs, but who knows how long it could really be. I would be surprised if he plays in the lineup tonight just because he didn't practice the day before. The Leafs, now ever since their last game, they're not holding morning skates now, so it's not even like we're able to kind of evaluate him on the ice, see how he looks.
David, yesterday Mike Babcock said, if anyone expects us to be active at the deadline, I'd find something else to do. So one, are you going to have to find something else to do on deadline day? And more importantly, are you surprised that Toronto wouldn't be active?
Well, sadly, his words do not give me the day off. So that's the first part of your question there. But the second one is, I still think they're going to do something. I mean, their fourth line could really use some work. I actually wrote about Ben Smith yesterday, their fourth line center, who's kind of tailed a bit since he's returned from a hand injury. they could really use another fourth line forward, someone to kind of at least add a little bit more skill to that line. So the rolling four lines, if they actually want to be really competitive in the playoffs, there's that. They could use another defenseman. I get the sense that they're still going to veer young. They picked up Andre Marchenko on waivers from Detroit. My sense there is that he's a piece that they're going to use once they start maybe selling off a couple of pieces. They're not in seller mode, but they could probably get a good return for someone like either a Matt Hunwick or Roman Polak to a team that's really contending and can use an insurance piece. And if they can get a second-round pick out of that, I wouldn't be surprised if they do that while still trying to contend. I think they still have the long-term future in mind, but they're going to be active at the deadline. I don't see them doing absolutely nothing.
David Alter, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. David covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for TheAthletic.com in Toronto. David, the Leafs are currently occupying the second wild card spot. They're a point behind the Boston Bruins for third in the Atlantic. They do have two games in hand, but hot on their heels now are the Florida Panthers. Yeah. On the heels of their 4-1 victory in Anaheim. Panthers playing some very good hockey as of late. You know, is this Toronto Maple Leafs team, are they... Given their youth, you know, how are they? How do you expect them to react in a situation where the pressure is beginning to come from behind at a pretty high pace? You know, the Florida Panthers are, like I said, nipping on their heels right now, and the Leafs never, you know, most of these players not having been in this situation before. How do you expect them to respond to that added pressure as we get closer and closer to the NHL playoffs?
Any other year, I would say they would buckle under the pressure and probably not be able to kind of survive the crush that's behind them. What I've liked from Mike Babcock is he's managed to kind of see things in the perspective in a way that is part of his everyday life. It's not just in the room and then he goes home and then really worries about what's going to happen afterwards. He sticks to this whole five-game segment thing and doesn't look too far and doesn't look too ahead. So he looks at these five games, and the whole objective for the team is get 6 points in a five-game segment. Their first game started, they lost against the Jackets, so now they have 4 games to make 6 points, and that's how they're looking at it, and that's been working for them right now. And even when we talked about these playoff spots, they seem to kind of not really be fazed too much by it. And also, there's only been three instances this season, and just three instances where they've lost on back-to-back games in regulation all year, and only once where they've done it in three consecutive games. So they've been able to kind of pull out of the collapses, the streaks of the previous years. So those things combined make me feel like they'll survive it okay. I still think it may not be enough because it looks like it's going to be a lot of points to make the playoffs, although they do have the benefit of being in a much weaker Atlantic division. So it's going to be interesting to see. But, yeah, Florida's on their heels. Boston, I think, is going to have an upturn. All these teams that have tossed coaches. I looked at the record yesterday in the Florida broadcast. They're like 34-11 and something among all the teams that ditched their coaches and their records since. So it's going to be really tough for them in that division.
Dave, Josh Levo's a guy that's been up and down between the NHL and the AHL for the last 4 years. He's got 5 points, though, in his last two games. Is he a guy that you think is finally ready to stick full-time with the Leafs?
Well, good for him, because he was kind of stuck on this situation where he was being a healthy scratch for months, similar to a defenseman the Leafs had in Frank Corrado, where they finally waived him to get him some playing time. And we thought maybe the same was going to happen to Levo, just because no one was getting hurt up front. He was always the healthy scratch. Leafs like to carry two defensemen. Finally, he gets in after Nikita Soshnikov gets an injury. And yeah, he's been really good in that spot. A lot of people have called him Joffrey Lupul Light, which kind of the same kind of body frame and maybe has that potential to kind of put up points, but kind of plays with the same kind of guys that Lupul used to play with when he was still with the Maple Leafs. So it's interesting. Like, it's two games where he's put up a lot of points. He's not supposed to be this type of point getter on a consistent basis, but he's supposed to be that power forward spot who can contribute, and now maybe this kind of changes the Leafs' philosophy of what they do with their fourth line, because they've got some guys who are the old-school fourth line and not the new-school fourth line of rolling, skilled offensive players who can play equal minutes to a third or second liner. So Maybe Levo pushes that. He certainly has been around for a while. He's earned the opportunity to keep playing. I don't know if there's a long-term fit for him with the Leafs, perhaps with another team, just because the Leafs are stacked with so many forwards and have other problem areas that Levo's probably on the outside looking in for next season, unless he continues to put up these points.
David, right now in at Rico Coliseum, in a few hours actually, the Moose and the Marlies are going to do battle, a rematch of last night's game after the Marlies took it 5-2. Toronto has a lot of nice prospects in the pool, one of which did a lot of damage in last night's game was Seth Griffith, who had they picked him up, obviously, and he had a goal and two assists last night in the victory over Manitoba. Do you see him as a player with Brendan Leipzig injured who could get called up, or do you see somebody else taking that spot first?
I would like to say it's him. I think he's earned the opportunity for sure, especially since he reported to the Marlies after being picked up on waivers. But when he was with the Leafs, it just looked like Coach Babcock didn't trust him in most situations and didn't give him the same kind of leash as he would probably give some other forwards. And I think it would take a lot for him to kind of get called back up. He should be first on the list just because guys like Leipzig are still hurt, still recovering from a concussion. Kapanen still also kind of recovering from injury as well. Those were kind of your 1-2 prospects that would fill an offensive role. But Seth Griffith definitely earned it, and he's been through a lot. He's been through waivers 3 times this season and somehow has managed to stick. Toronto used the recall to kind of retain his rights and put him in the Marlies right away. Otherwise, the team might have been keen to kind of put him in their system. Seth Griffith has been on fire since he's joined the Marlies again and definitely earns an opportunity or should earn an opportunity. But if there's not enough injuries to necessitate a call-up within a couple of weeks or even less, then that opportunity is probably going to go to somebody else.
Dave, Nikita Zaitsev, 25-year-old defenseman for the Leafs, undrafted, signed by the Leafs of the offseason for $925,000. He's got 26 points in 56 games. He's now paired up with Morgan Rielly on the top pair. Is he the best bargain in the league right now?
I think so. And the funny thing about this is on a radio interview, Babcock said yesterday, I was just telling Lou, I don't know where we'd be if we didn't have this guy. Because it's not often that you get a 25-year-old rookie and have him playing top-pairing minutes and be successful at it. But he, I guess being in the KHL for so many years with Red Army, with his one of the top flight teams in the K, it's at least helped him adapt to this spot quite a bit. And now the real question with Zaitsev is how much is he worth going into next year? I know they had talked when he was eligible to sign in the beginning of January. They had to revisit it because they were still far apart. And both management wanted to see a longer sample size than half the season. And management wanted to be able to, or the agent wanted to prove that he's still able to keep playing this way even late into the season. So it's an interesting call. They definitely need him. I think they could use another defenseman in the 1-2 spot or even a 3-4 spot going down the road because they're just not really deep defensively right now, and the offense has kind of carried a lot of that. It's covered that up quite a bit. And they play a 5-man D as well where they all go back and pinch in for each other. So Dyson's a key piece. They definitely need more help on that, though, but he's been a welcome surprise for sure.
David, we'll let you go on this last question. Nazem Kadri signed the big contract extension in the offseason. He got 6 years and $27 million. He certainly rewarded the Maple Leafs' faith in him by, you know, he's on pace for what's clearly going to look like a career year for Kadri. Is he more comfortable playing sort of that, you know, being not the focus of the attention in Toronto, maybe playing that second fiddle role as Austin Matthews, of course, gets all the headlines right now? Is Kadri more comfortable being that guy who just as a pro goes about his business and doesn't necessarily have to face the spotlight as the man, quote unquote, on a night in, night out basis?
You know, it's funny you say that because I remember in previous years when he just joined, it didn't seem like that was the role that he would accept. And the bet on, he was constantly betting on himself that he could get more money, do better with more minutes. Now, he, ever since Mike Babcock came in, he's kind of thrived on this being a guy who wants to contend for the Selke Trophy, who wants to be that defensive guy. And I think that six-year contract helped him with that, because psychologically now you're not thinking about, oh, I got to be putting up points for my next deal. It's already set in stone and done, so you can focus on being a better all-around player, which is what he's done. He's getting the top lines on a nightly basis to be the checker against them, to kind of match up against them, especially at the home games. And he's been doing a pretty good job with it. Despite his size, he's not pushed off the puck a lot. He's really worked on gaining what a lot of people in the hockey world call hockey strength, which is, it doesn't matter how big you are, if you have the strength and the low center of gravity and you're not pushed off the puck, you'll do pretty well. And that's what Kadri's been able to do. So yeah, I think he's grown from a maturation standpoint. When he was suspended by the team for being late to a practice a little under 2 years ago to now, he's definitely come a long way and is really embracing that role right now in a leadership capacity.
Sorry, Dave, one more question. Are you expecting any wedding proposals tonight at the ACC?
Oh, well, because there were two the other night? Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I hope not. Like, there were so many on the Valentine's game, and two in one night seemed like a lot. We were kind of joking when there was the second one that came. That guy was probably like, damn it, because the first one happened, so it probably took a lot of the luster off that. Most people I talk to don't want it in a public setting anyway, so that's a whole other doghouse to deal with.
David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for TheAthletic.com in Toronto. David, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Talk to you soon.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the importance of Brian Little to the Jets and how they're going to handle his pending free agency after next season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Back in for Wheeler. Lowry heads to the front of the net. Cross ice. Score! What a feed by Blake Wheeler, and Brian Little has his second power play goal of the game. And the Jets have a 2-goal lead.
Brian Little of the Winnipeg Jets scoring in that clip. He's an unrestricted free agent after next season, which means the Jets are eligible to talk contract with him as of July 1st, 2017. And it's an interesting question for the Winnipeg Jets as to what they are going to do with Mr. Brian Little. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. A reminder that if you missed out on getting tickets for Jay Farrow, another show has been added. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And check out tonight, Michael Costa, his final night in town. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Like I said, rumorscomedyclub.com. Brian Little, guys, we know how important he has been to the Winnipeg Jets. We've spoken about it, about how key his return was to the Jets lineup after he missed a majority of the year, or a majority of the early part of the year with that, I believe it was an ankle injury, if I recall correctly. Jets sort of have an interesting question on their hands as to what to do with Brian Little, who's going to be 30 years old next season. He turns 30 on November 12th. Is it imperative from your perspective that the Jets re-sign Brian Little before he hits unrestricted free agency?
Drew, the simple answer to that is yes. And to me, it's not a question. I mean, I think it's fairly obvious to anyone who has watched the Jets since they've returned from Atlanta that Brian Little is a huge part of this team. I mean, what else can you say? And you mentioned, you know, he missed 23 games, I believe it was, earlier in the season with that injury. He left the first period of the opening game against the Carolina Hurricanes, and just look at how the Jets played after that. And he plays on the power play, he plays on the penalty kill, he's good on faceoffs. I mean, we all know this, guys. Mm-hmm. Brian Little is an excellent center, and now Mark Scheifele is obviously taken over that number one center role and has emerged as that number one center that the Jets thought he would be when they drafted him seventh overall in 2011. But they absolutely have to sign Brian Little, guys. And we know that the Jets have gone young here, and they're going to now build their team around Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, and some of their other young players. You could throw in Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey in there as well. But for me, I mean, Brian Little is that perfect veteran center that you want to have in that kind of secondary scoring role, if you want to call him that. And I wouldn't even call Brian Little a secondary scorer. He's a primary scorer. But what I mean is, you know that he's going to be that great second-line center for you for many years. There are some injury concerns, but I don't think that's going to prevent you from signing him. So if I'm Kevin Cheveldayoff, Drew, and you know it's July 1st, I would have no problem signing Brian Little to a 5-year contract extension.
And you're comfortable, you know, giving him, because he's going to ask for about $6 million a year.
Well, and this is the problem.
I mean, it's a big ticket. He doesn't come cheap when you look at a guy like David Backes, who was 32 years old when he signed with the Boston Bruins this past offseason.
Different kind of player,
but
plays more of a physical game.
Right, but if you're looking at Backes' numbers, he was coming off a year last year where he had 45 points. You know, Brian Little, you know, that's, you know, his career high is 64 points, and that was a few years back. But Brian Little is, you know, when healthy, you know, going to be a guy who's going to get you between, you know, 50 and 60 points if he plays a full season. So he's going to demand, you know, upwards of $6 million a year.
Sure, and if you want to use David Backes as a comparable, Drew, I don't think St. Louis is as good a team without Backes.
Sure.
So, I mean, you take Brian Little off this team, and it's a worse team. How are you going to replace Brian Little? So I agree with you. What I think is going to be a problem, Drew, going forward, is that what happens when Patrick Laine is on his second contract? Mm-hmm. What happens when Nikolai Ehlers is coming off of his entry-level contract? You're already paying Blake Wheeler the big bucks. Mm-hmm. You're already paying Dustin Byfuglien the big bucks. You can't have seven guys on the team making more than $6 million a year, right? It just doesn't work with the salary cap. Look at Chicago. I mean, they constantly have to move players because Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, and now Panarin and Hossa make the big money, right? Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some concerns there. But if you ask me, you know, whether or not I think the Jets should sign Brian Little long term, I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer. It's absolutely yes.
Yeah, and I mean, he's having such an impactful season. I mean, he had 6 goals in that last block of 10 for the Jets. His shooting percentage, again, he's a career like 13% shooter. This year right now, he's shooting at about a 19-something percentage, I should say. So he's been very good. And there's an interesting article written by Andrew Berkshire a couple days ago about Brian Little, and just talking about his shot quality and where he's been getting the shots from. And he spoke about the fact that whereas historically he's been shooting from about 26.5 feet out, and not from really as dangerous a spot. This year, he's shooting from about 17.5, so a lot tighter to the goal. And don't let me just quickly qualify my statement by saying what Brian Little does is not simply defined by his goal scoring. I mean, Brian Little does so many important things for this team that don't necessarily get recognized. And you know, we here in Winnipeg see Brian Little, so we can see the things that he does. But generally outside the league, he doesn't really get a lot of recognition. But, you know, he does so many intangible things, so many impactful things in a game, whether it's his face-offs, just whether it's his positioning, whether it's, you know, helping two young line mates like Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine play better. He does all the right things. And, you know, Coach Maurice talked about it, and we talked about it a few weeks ago when we had a Brian Little segment, on the fact that he's been able to just come in and balance this team. And so, as Ez just talked about, where's this team without Brian Little? Now, of course, conversely, you have to say, as Ezzy also talked about, what are the other contracts that you're going to have to factor in when you're talking about a potentially $5 or $6 million guy? And how does that compare when you have Patrick Laine going to the second contract? Not yet, not the year of Little, but still. And then you're going to have Ehlers, and you're going to have a number of guys. But the problem is, if you want to be a team, especially at that point, you don't have a choice. At the time when Brian Little's contract comes up, this is a Jets team that will have projected to be a contender, not necessarily a Stanley Cup contender, but you have to be a perennial playoff, in a perennial playoff position. You can't not be. And you're not going to be that without Brian Little. I like Jack Roslovic. Jack Roslovic is that mold of a Brian Little, but he's not Brian Little, and he's going to need years in the NHL before he'll become Brian Little. So you can't say, well, you'll replace Brian Little with Jack Roslovic and all will be well, because that's not the way it works. Well, Jack Roslovic was a nice piece.
He's 20 years old.
That's my point, is that you've got a guy who will be a nice piece eventually, but don't rush him. That's the whole point. That's why you don't have success, is that you rush these pieces. So you leave Roslovic alone. You allow this team to develop with players like Brian Little. You augment it with the proper additions, and you have a playoff team. But you need Brian Little in the lineup. If you don't have Brian Little, you just have Mark Scheifele. And then who's your second-line center after Brian Little?
Well, I think what the Jets would say is that at some point, I mean, maybe Roslovic needs another year in the minors.
No, it's not maybe. There's no question he needs it.
So then you're right. You need Brian Little, because when Roslovic is ready to come into the NHL, you're probably, if you're the Jets, you're much better off having him come in a third-line role where he's insulated and he's not relied on. And so you can go Scheifele, Little up the middle, and then maybe Roslovic.
What hurts the Jets most, Drew, right now is the fact that the salary cap is not going up much. And Scheifele's making $6.1 million. Wheeler makes $5.6 million. Little, as you mentioned, is probably going to command around $6 million a year. You wonder if the Jets do decide to expose Matthew Perreault in the expansion draft. He's making $4.1 million for 4 years after this year. I mean, there's only so many dollars to spread around, right? And the Jets, as we know, have a lot tied up in their defense.
Right.
And then Jacob Trouba is another guy. He's going to need to be re-upped after next year.
Look, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, I think the best case scenario at the end of the expansion draft is that Matthew Perreault's contract isn't on your books, because it really does hamstring you with all the other contracts you need to get done after that. Much more, of course, we'll talk about that and Brian Little and Perreault and the expansion draft throughout the course of the remainder of the season. When we come back, Amanda Stein joins us from our sister station in Montreal. We get you set for the Jets and the Habs later this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Amanda Stein. Amanda covers the Montreal Canadiens for our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. Amanda, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. Always enjoy being with my Illegal Curve buddies.
Absolutely.
How's it going in Westmount?
It's going wonderful. We have excellent snow removal coverage over here. So one of the best in the city, because it's done privately. So I'm living like a queen over here. Thank you very much.
You know, Amanda, I lived on Irvine for about 3 months in my early 20s.
Really?
Thinking that I was going to live in Montreal for a really long time.
Yeah,
but
then
the
province asked them to leave, actually.
I just drank a lot of beer and wasted a lot of time.
And money.
Yes, all those things happen in this city. I don't understand, though, how you went from living in Montreal to living in Winnipeg. No offense.
Ooh. Oh, is that a zing? Did you just zing us?
It's funny because I just watched an episode of The Office where Michael Scott goes to Winnipeg.
Right.
And it looks miserable.
Amanda!
I'm sorry.
Can we just cut this interview now?
You are playing with fire. I got to tell you.
I've only been to Winnipeg once, and it was through the airport. I was flying from Montreal to Winnipeg, Winnipeg to Calgary for the Heritage Classic. And all I remember is when we landed, it was just like gray and snowy.
And you are asking for trouble, Amanda.
And for the record, nobody gets more sun than us.
Yes, we are very sunny, for the record. And also a good feature about Winnipeg that Montreal can't speak about is that at least our bridges don't collapse and aren't made out of crackers.
You have me there. You have me there. Our infrastructure, it's, every time you go over a bridge, you're just hoping that you make it to the other side. I'm sorry. This is a terrible way to start this show.
Amanda, right now it's Festival de Voyageurs, which is a celebration of Manitoba's French-Canadian heritage. So, this is
very nice.
You're going to really get yourself in trouble here.
Pretty sure, actually, we just had it canceled.
Yeah, you're not invited anymore, Amanda. We were going to invite you, but now you're not invited at all.
This is really bad. I'm sorry. I'm sure Winnipeg is a lovely place.
Do you want to hang up and should we start the interview over again? You know, we can just press the reset button.
Hi, I'm here to talk to the guys at the Legal Curve.
Yeah. All righty. Okay, we'll let that slide for now, but we are going to – you're going to hear about that, but we'll let that slide for now and talk about the Jets and the Habs as they're going to be on the ice competing against one another at 1 o'clock Central Time here in Winnipeg. Quiet bye week for the Montreal Canadiens. Not much happened at all. You know, it's just – obviously, the news, Michel Therrien being dismissed, Claude Julien being hired. We know about the struggles of the Habs since that tremendous start to the season. How surprised were you on, I believe it was Monday, when the news came down that the Habs had made the decision to relieve Michel Therrien of his duties?
I think because Claude Julien was available, I wasn't as surprised. I mean, really, everyone that I spoke to, everyone was 50-50. No one really knew because, you know, Marc Bergevin had such a deep-rooted loyalty to Michel Therrien, especially what happened last year and the way he talked about him and not firing him last year. It was almost inconceivable that he would fire him in first place. But the fact of the matter is the five games saved maybe when they were in Arizona – before the bye week, there was zero effort, zero enthusiasm. The team did not show up. They were shut out three times, and you can't let a season like this slip away, especially after what happened last year. And I do believe that Marc Bergevin, though won't say it publicly, did meet with his leadership group. I'm sure it came up, and ultimately, I think this was the right decision, especially given speaking to the players yesterday coming off the bye week. It was their first time addressing it. And the thing that resonated most with me was that everyone was saying, I mean, really word for word, everyone would say, you know, there wasn't enthusiasm anymore. That was no longer part of their, you know, game plan, so to speak, when they were out there. And they needed this change. Everyone feels like it's a fresh start. And, I mean, what a way to have a fresh start, right? You're still first in the division. And Ottawa's creeping up on them. But if they can breathe some new life into their season, I think they have a really good chance with Claude Julien.
Amanda, was Marc Bergevin able to make this move at this point in the season, not only because Claude Julien has coached previously with Montreal, but because he's familiar with the division and he has such an incredible coaching pedigree at the Olympics and World Cup?
Yeah, I think the pedigree, I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that he was here before, but I think the Stanley Cup with the Bruins, gold medals with Team Canada in Olympic and at the World Cup. All those things play into it. Plus, he is really one of the best coaches out there. And let's not forget, the fact that he is a French-speaking, a bilingual coach plays heavily into this decision. Montreal already narrows themselves down in a small coaching pool of who they can comfortably hire. The coach here, they have said from the very beginning when Jeff Molson bought the team, is that they need a bilingual coach. So I almost feel that a part of this decision was we can't let this guy go to somebody else at the end of the season when other vacancies open up because the pool is so small already that how can you pass up a guy who speaks both languages and also has incredible pedigree and respect around the league?
Amanda, fans are slightly excited based on the fact that they were packed to the rafters yesterday at practice, and we talked about it earlier, three live cameras. What's it like in Montreal right now from the fans' perspective?
I think it's everyone's really excited, and you're right. Yesterday I got to the practice facility about an hour before practice started. Already I had a hard time finding parking. Thankfully I did, and when I was inside, people were lined up. So the way it kind of works at their practice facilities, you can't actually go into the arena, but you can stand on the outside where it's glass all the way around. And there were six people deep just trying to catch a glimpse. So that in and of itself really speaks to it. And like you mentioned, two live television broadcasts and our radio broadcasts, all from the practice facility getting their first glimpse. People are excited. And I think, you know, patience wore thin, not only with the players with Michel Therrien, but also with the fan base. And they're anxious. They're anxious to see their team do well. I mean, if you guys mentioned it at the top here, they did so well at the beginning of the year. So already that builds a degree of excitement. And then they tapered off again like they did last year. So I think you know, Carey Price said in the locker room yesterday, it felt like a new season yesterday at the practice rink. And I truly feel that that's what the fan base is feeling as well. And just the amount of people that showed up, that's what it's like during training camp when you've gone all summer without any Montreal Canadiens practices or anything to look at. It felt like a training camp.
Amanda Stein, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Amanda's with our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690. She's now public enemy number one in Winnipeg, but we'll try and overlook that.
I feel so terrible.
She'd probably be called the stepsister station at this point.
Yeah.
We have to divorce ourselves.
Amanda, you have nothing to worry about. Drew's actually still public enemy number one.
You know, as much as Claude Julien will bring a new voice and a freshness behind the Montreal Canadiens bench, he's not going to be able to play the game. So how do the Habs solve their scoring problems, primarily their secondary scoring issues? Those haven't gone away. So, you know, what changes with the addition of Claude Julien in that perspective?
Well, I don't know if anything actually changes with Claude Julien from that specific perspective. I mean, certainly, you know, we saw at practice yesterday, he bumped up Alex Galchenyuk to the top line, centering Pacioretty and Radulov. That's something that Michel Therrien wasn't doing recently anyways and had Phil Deneau up on that first line. So that might jumpstart Alex Galchenyuk a little bit more, because coming off a second injury for him, he was a bit slow. But you're absolutely right. In terms of secondary scoring, they don't have that much anymore. Plekanec is much older. He's not contributing the same way he used to. Paul Byron, sure, he's been contributing a little bit here and there recently, but they've got five games now until the trade deadline. And I think as much as Claude Julien will help jumpstart some of these guys to get back on track, it's going to be up to Marc Bergevin, because he's not stupid. He knows he doesn't have the depth that he needs. And I really think that in terms of that secondary scoring, it's going to come from a trade made at the deadline.
Amanda, you just bring up the trade deadline. I wanted to ask you about Michael McCarron. He was drafted in the first round in 2013, and he was recalled from the Ice Caps yesterday. Is he a guy that still factors into the long-term plans? Because he hasn't put up very good numbers with the Habs, or is this a guy that Bergevin might move?
I don't think he'll end up moving him. In fact, the sort of, I guess, song about him is that they really like him. And because he's a big guy, he's a physical guy, and this year he's really coming into his own, I think they've realized that he's not a guy that's going to put up, you know, tons of numbers, or tons of points, rather, on the board. But he is very useful in that third-line role that he's been playing, third or fourth line. They don't have anybody of his size. So to give someone up like him would be a drastic move for someone like Marc Bergevin. He's not willing to mortgage what he sees as the future. And I know that that kind of contradicts the idea of making trades and big trades, but he believes in his young talent, and I really don't think that he is someone who's going to be moved. He's been very useful this year for the team, and he only went back down to the Ice Caps because he got some playing time while the team was on a one-week break. He's been called up now, so I expect him to be factoring in over the next couple days here. But I don't see them giving up on Mike McCarron just yet, especially in a year where he's really found his groove. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, the past couple of years, there was he was just a little starstruck, which you can't blame the kid. He's a young kid. He's 21 years old. He was a bit starstruck, and sometimes he said he would look up, and it would be Sidney Crosby on the ice. How do you not, you know, sort of stop in your tracks a bit? Now that has worn off for him, and I think it's really benefited him to becoming the third-line center role that they want to see from him.
Amanda, you tweeted the first thing that players worked on was the D-zone coverage. And, and you know, we talk about Montreal scoring, but, like, is that the most important thing that they're going to have to work on is to really help Carey Price? Is their D-zone coverage?
Yeah, and I spoke to Carey about that afterwards, which is, you know, his quote was, you know, thankfully, you know, we're working on some defense now. I mean, look, yes, Carey Price has to fix the problems on his own because it's not, you know, he's not playing badly because the defense was having a rough time. But they were just spending way too much time in their own zone. And they need to be able to, you know, shore up their defense. They need to be able to be playing better defense so that they're not relying on Carey Price all the time. And I think, you know, when it comes to Carey and helping him, I think just the idea of knowing that his defense will be playing better, or that there'll be more of a defense-first approach, especially in practice, just helps him mentally. I think this whole experience of having Coach Julian coming in, I don't think that there's a player who is more happy than Carey Price. That's sort of the feeling I got yesterday. But ultimately, it comes down to Carey. He's got to find his game. He has not been good enough. I mean, he will probably be the first person to tell you that. It has nothing to do with everybody in front of him, but it helps when he has better communication, a better understanding of what his defensemen are doing, a little more structure in front of him, because they've really gotten away from their game in the last five or six games or so leading up to that bye week.
Amanda, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned that you don't foresee the Habs, you know, trading away a Michael McCarron or Mikhail Sergachev to acquire one of those.
Sergachev is an absolute no.
Right.
Like that, Mark Bergevin explicitly said he's not going anywhere.
Then how do the Habs address their secondary scoring issues in the trade market? We know they've been linked to a guy like Martin Hanzel out of Arizona. There was chatter about Matt Duchene coming over from Colorado. You know, something's got to give if you want to acquire one of those guys, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm glad I'm not a GM, because you have to make those types of decisions and you'll be second-guessed on it, you know, going forward. I wish I had the answer on how to get everything you want by giving up nothing. But if one thing we've learned about Marc Bergevin's tenure in Montreal is that he is one of the GMs who has been the most crafty and been able to almost steal other players from other, I don't know what he says or what type of charm he puts on the other GMs, but if you consider, you know, he got rid of Dale Weiss, he got rid of Thomas Fleischmann, ended up getting Andrew Shaw, you know, all these things, or rather in that trade, it was for Phil Deneau, who's been a huge asset for the team. He has been able to turn nothing into something. I don't know if it'll really go that way when it comes to someone like Matt Duchene, but one thing I do know is that Mark Bergevin does have tricks up his sleeve that if I'm another GM, I'm trying not to put on the blinders. I'm trying to focus on how do I get the most, because he's been able to steal a lot of players over his five-year tenure.
Amanda Stein covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690 in Montreal. Amanda, on behalf of Tourism Manitoba or Tourism Illegal Curve, we do recommend you come to Winnipeg. You will immediately regret your comments if you don't already regret them. You know, Ezzie's getting married in the summer, so maybe you can make a trip down here, maybe be Dave's plus one for Ezzie's wedding. That would be a nice way to experience a lovely Winnipeg summer. Get out of the humidity, get out of the smog, get out of the, you know, the warmth of Montreal in a sticky summer, and come embrace the fresh air and the big sky that a Manitoba summer has to offer.
That was a really good sell job. I'm very impressed.
I'm trying to cut you some slack here is what I'm trying to do.
I know. Listen, if I get an invite, I will happily come to Winnipeg and experience all the wonderful things it has to offer.
Excellent cover up. Way to cover up for your earlier error.
Yeah, Amanda, just don't come between November and March.
Oh,
don't be ridiculous.
Don't worry, I won't.
It's 6 degrees right now in Winnipeg.
It's beautiful.
So it's really not cold at all.
I love wearing rain boots in February, Drew.
It's 6 degrees, so it's not cold in Winnipeg today. It hasn't been for the past week, so let's get that misconception out of our minds immediately. Amanda, thank you for this.
Thank you, guys. I hope I'm invited back.
Get to the peg, Amanda.
Well, you're invited to Ezzie's wedding. I'll send you an invite. You're invited.
All right. Sounds
Alrighty.
Good.
See you, Amanda. Thanks
one,
very
guys.
Much. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to discuss, is it time for a defenseman to be a nominee for the Hart Trophy?
Yeah.
Coming up next, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
I think that Sidney Crosby ultimately is going to win, but I'm going to make a case for Brent Burns of the San Jose Sharks based on the unbelievable season that he's having. Now, I'm a Norris Trophy voter, so this one should be a tap-in for the Norris, but we're talking about the Hart. I mean, this guy controls pace. He's incredibly smart. He's got the poise. He's a terrific skater. The goals with 25 points with 61. But above all that, you know, he's a hybrid in today's NHL. I call him a dwinger. He's part defenseman and he's part winger. So depending on the remainder of this regular season, and there's reason to believe based on what we've seen that his dominance isn't going to slip, I think he's got a good shot.
That was Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, discussing Brent Burns. Probably shouldn't ever use the word dwinger again because it just doesn't sound right. But Brent Burns is having a tremendous year for the San Jose Sharks, as has been well documented. So the question I have for you gentlemen, is it time for a defenseman to be considered for the Hart Trophy? It's been since, I believe, the year 2000 since a defenseman won.
Chris Pronger.
Yeah, won the Hart Trophy. That was Chris Pronger back in 2000. So it's been 17 years since a defenseman has won the trophy. Should Brent Burns be in the conversation this year? Should he be one of the nominees for the Hart Trophy?
Absolutely. And you guys know that Burnsy is one of my favorite players in the league. And, you know, when you look at what he's done over the last couple of years, and remember, when Brent Burns came over from the Minnesota Wild in that trade, I mean, he was he a forward? Was he a defenseman? Because he'd played both, right, at the NHL and junior levels. But he had 75 points last year, which is incredible, with 27 goals. And then this year, he's on pace for more points than that. He's already got 25 goals and 61 points. So 30 goals and 80 points isn't beyond the realm of possibility, right, Drew? So for a defenseman to score 30 goals and 80 points in this day and age, I think alone should get you a nomination for the Hart Trophy. But I think, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say that Brent Burns is the favorite right now, because right now I think it's Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby 1-2.
Yeah,
I would give it to McDavid personally, but I think you could make a strong argument that Crosby is the most valuable player, and it's tough to argue against that when the guy's resume has two Stanley Cups and two Olympic golds and a World Cup gold. So, but absolutely, he's got to be in the conversation, Drew, and we know that there's a lot of good players in the league, and you can make strong arguments for a bunch of players to be a Hart Trophy finalist, but Brent Burns has turned into an absolute elite offensive defenseman, and I don't think he gets credit for how good he is defensively, because that wasn't his strong suit, and he's got better defensively. But absolutely, if I have a vote, which I don't,
thank God,
I would make Brent Burns one of the finalists for the Hart Trophy along with Crosby and McDavid.
Dave, if not this year, then when? For a defenseman really being, you know, truly in the running for the Hart Trophy. I mean, if it's not Brent Burns, who's third in the league in points, he's over a point a game. The team that he leads is currently atop the Pacific Division. They are certainly a Stanley Cup contender, even though really they're flying much under the radar, you know, the San Jose Sharks, as they always do. So if not now, if the cards aren't right for Brent Burns to be, you know, one of the nominees, or to even be, you know, a winner of the Hart Trophy, then when is a defenseman going to win it again?
No, it's a fair question, Drew. I mean, it's the player judged most valuable to his team, right? So you're looking at that as the criteria, and you're thinking to yourself, where that, and you have to basically just, like we talked about earlier when we said, where would the Jets be without Laine's 27 goals? Where would the Sharks be without, you know, the impact that Brett Burns has on a nightly basis for this team? And it's a good bet that they wouldn't be a team that's challenging for the Western Conference, to be the representative of the Western Conference for potentially the Stanley Cup for the second year in a row. So, you know, especially the problem that he has going against him, to be honest with you, aside from the fact that he's a defenseman, because, I mean, he's third in scoring. I mean, like, that's pretty significant for a defenseman.
Isn't that nuts, Dave?
It's crazy. Like, honestly, it really is. It's unbelievable when you look at that and you think to yourself, like, it's between Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, who also leads his team in scoring, that you don't very often see the defenseman being the driver from that perspective. But, you know, it's an interesting argument. But the problem, I think, that he has going against him, and this is, we talked about it earlier when we talk about the bias with Laine versus Matthews, is how many voters specifically, because those are the most important ones, watch Brent Burns play on a nightly basis. Right. And the answer, unfortunately, for Brent Burns is not many. Yep. And, you know, while it's nice that Darren Dreger makes the comment, the reality is that most of the guys out East, and I don't know this authoritatively, but I think it's a fair assumption, that they're not watching San Jose Sharks games at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night in Toronto or New York and that sort of thing. So, unfortunately for Brent Burns, it's location, it's geography that I think is going against them, not his play on the ice, because I just don't know how many people watch him and don't know how integral he is to that team and the things that he does. So I think that's pretty much the primary driver against voting for his case.
You know, it's an interesting one for Brent Burns. I mean, he is the best player on the defending Western Conference champions. He's the best player on a team that could very well win the Western Conference again. Yet, I think everybody would be surprised if he's in the running, or if he's, you know, maybe he'll get a nomination. But it also wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't. And there just seems to be an inherent bias. You know, it's sort of like the Heisman Trophy in college football, if you want to make a comparison, that, or you know,
Hobie Baker.
Yeah, the Hobie Baker to some extent, that a, you know, in football, that a defensive player can't ever win the MVP award. in the NHL, a defenseman can't ever win the MVP award. Yet you ask most coaches, and they would say every team needs a stud defenseman on the back end to really be an elite team.
You know what I love the most about Brent Burns, Drew? I mean, this guy is a beauty. First off, he's from Saskatchewan. Pardon me, Ontario, which I love. And he doesn't look like you should maybe look as far as being a top player. What I mean by that is, I mean, this is a guy that's got the big beard, and he's a guy that he has so much fun on the ice. He's always joking around. He does a lot of charity work in the California area, and he's a guy that he kind of was a bit of a late bloomer. And it's not like Brent Burns has just been putting up these numbers, as of late. We talked about his season last year was his career year with 75 points, but he's been a solid offensive defenseman for the San Jose Sharks for some time now. And, this is a guy that you want to promote in hockey. And, you know, we know how much fun Burns and Thornton have, you know, with the beards. And
well, that commercial they shot was the best. The one where they're just going back and forth and he makes a Chewbacca sound. And it's just like, you get to see how much fun those guys have. And that's, you know, part of the charm of Brent Burns is that he just clearly has so much fun on the ice. I think the reason Ezzie has a bit of a man crush right now is because in 2011, Ezzie informed Brent Burns that he was the best dressed player at the 2011 NHL draft in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, Minnesota. Isn't that right, Ez?
Yeah, and it's funny because...
Is this an award you're handing out now that nobody's told me about?
No.
Well, Brent Burns had just been traded.
I remember. He'd been traded from Minnesota to San Jose.
Yeah.
And who were you talking to? What coach were you talking to?
No, Ez was
upset about...
Remus and I were at the draft, right. And someone informed Mike Babcock at the time, who was coaching Detroit.
Right.
And he wasn't very happy about that trade because... I mean, that trade really changed the fortunes of the San Jose Sharks, because the Sharks were a great team. Thornton and Marlowe, Pavelski, all these guys, they had good teams. But, I mean, Brent Burns, I think, is a big part of the reason why the Sharks turned into an elite team and went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. I'm just a big fan overall of Burns on and off the ice. And I think he deserves all the success he's got here. And back to your original question, I mean, what he's doing right now, he should be in the Hart Trophy conversation.
We will see coming up in June if he is indeed in that, as is one of those nominees, pardon me, for the Hart Trophy. When we come back, the trade deadline is 10 days away. Latest rumors from around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Speaking of Matt Duchene, I know that Mark Bergevin made it abundantly clear that he's not prepared to mortgage the future of the Montreal Canadiens to go out and get a piece like Matt Duchene. A number of teams in the National Hockey League, and Montreal could very well be one of them, actually think that Duchene plays better as a winger than as a center in the National Hockey League. So it will be interesting to see both how Montreal and other teams proceed on that front.
The Bob Father, TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie, giving his latest update regarding Matt Duchene, his future as a member of the Colorado Avalanche. The trade deadline is 10 days away from now, Wednesday, March the 1st. Of course, complete coverage of the NHL trade deadline here on TSN 1290.
Drew, do you believe in a thing called love?
I do believe in a thing called love. I am married, so if I didn't, it would be sort of troubling that I wouldn't believe in a thing called love.
I also believe in love.
That's lovely. Do you love me?
Of course.
Oh, that's sweet. Platonically, though.
There's a lot of post-Valentine's Day love.
I also love this coffee that I'm drinking, so I wouldn't get too excited.
You also love lamp. Are you just looking around the room and saying things you love? Yeah. You know, it's like when George says, when Jerry asked George if he's ever said the L word, George says he said it to a dog once. The dog licked himself and left the room.
Yeah, I love computer screen.
Exactly. 25 minutes before the top of the hour. Hustler and Lawless, follow us, of course, here on TSN 1290, getting you set for the Jets and the Habs, a 1 p.m. puck drop. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. If you want a jersey to be customized and you want it to be done by the best, that is our friends at Keener Jerseys. You can visit them online at keenerjerseys.com, or you can check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them a Legal Curve sent you. Keener Jerseys, where craftsmanship and the attention to detail makes all the difference.
Do you think there's going to be any Matt Duchene fans out there that are going to Keener Jerseys with like 10 different jerseys? Just saying, I'm not sure who he's going to get traded to, but here's all these jerseys, and I'll let you know when Matt Duchene gets traded.
He's certainly been a topic of conversation. I'm skeptical. I've been skeptical the entire time. I remain skeptical about if the Avalanche are going to trade Matt Duchene before Wednesday, March the 1st. I see no reason for it happening. A quick whip around the various rumors that are hanging around there. Some chatter earlier this week about Marc-Andre Fleury possibly being an option for Calgary. The Flames, the goaltending has been a struggle this season. Brian Elliott obviously was brought in the offseason as the expected number one. He has struggled. Chad Johnson played well for a period of time. He has also struggled since then. Some thought that the Calgary Flames might be interested in Marc-Andre Fleury. As you know, going back to the beginning of the show when we were talking about the Jets and the Penguins, you don't see a reason for the Penguins to necessarily trade Marc-Andre Fleury now before the deadline, as opposed to at the end of the season before the expansion draft.
Yeah, and I mean the reason would obviously be, as you mentioned, Drew, because you can only protect one goaltender right now,
right?
And he has that no move clause, and they see Matt Murray, because of his age, being the long-term solution there in goal. But how do you go into the playoffs without Marc-Andre Fleury, guys? And we just saw him this past Thursday night. He absolutely robbed the Jets, I think, of the extra point. And what did he make, 44 saves? I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury is still a number one goaltender. So I'm not saying that the Calgary Flames wouldn't love to have Marc-Andre Fleury. I just don't know if the Penguins are going to move him, Drew. I just don't. I could see them hanging on to Marc-Andre Fleury and then deciding what to do with him, after the season and the playoffs are over. So I think, you know, the goaltending, you know, market right now is the most interesting one to me, because you have a Ben Bishop, for example, that I think is more likely to be moved because Tampa Bay is not going to make the playoffs. And Ben Bishop is a pending UFA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look like they are going to be able to sign him because he's going to want $5 million plus a year. So Ben Bishop, to me, is going to get some interest from a lot of teams.
In Columbus, Jarmo Kekalainen says he will not rush into any franchise-altering moves. The Blue Jackets, obviously going to be a playoff team, likely to meet the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round of the playoffs. I don't know if you guys saw any of that Blue Jackets-Penguins game last night.
It was very good.
But that's going to be a tremendous... It's a shame that's actually going to be a first-round playoff matchup, but that's going to be a tremendous series between the Blue Jackets and the Penguins. We know about the rivalry between Brandon Dubinsky and Sidney Crosby. It's going to be great to see that in a playoff setting like it was last night in Columbus. Jarmo Kekalainen says he's not going to rush into any franchise-altering moves. Quote, there will be a right time where we look at it and I think our window might be closing. Then maybe we should make a move like that. Our window is not closing in 2017. It's just starting to crack open. I don't see any reason to go crazy because we have a crack open in our window. We're trying to widen it by making wise long-term decisions and get better from within.
He's a very measured GM, so I don't see these guys. And, you know, we talked about it in an earlier interview. These teams aren't making big franchise-altering decisions, like Dean Brown was talking about it, right? And he said, you know, why are you going to make an addition, a big splash, add a huge name, and then it throws off the chemistry of the team? I mean, your team, most likely, if you think about it, the teams we're talking about really just need to add a piece or two. And generally, those pieces are depth. So, you know, you don't really need to add a tremendous name like a Matt Duchene and necessarily throw off the chemistry, because, you know, either you're giving up you're most likely not giving up a piece that you currently have because you need those pieces. So you're sacrificing the future. Now, for teams like the New York Rangers, perhaps, or the Washington Capitals, who to me, like the Capitals more than anyone, are in win now mode. I think like Washington has to win. I think, you know, like not this year, but if not this year, by next year. Like their window is diminishing. So I think they are a team more than Columbus, where you'd say the window is closing, not opening. And as a result, you're more likely to see a Washington team, I think, make some additions. But again, I don't see big names. I mean, you know, they were once big names, like maybe an Aginla, maybe a Shane Doan.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine a Shane Doan, to be honest with you, on any other franchise. Mm-hmm. And I really hope, like, if he does make a move, that he does go to a team that has a legitimate chance to compete for a Stanley Cup, because he's the type of player, you know, you always hate that, like with the Ray Bourque syndrome, where they play with one team for so long and then they move somewhere else. So at least if they do it, you don't want them to be out in the first round. It kind of puts a sour taste. But to me, I just don't see big moves being made at the draft.
Yeah, Matt Duchene, Dave, I agree with you, is the big question mark. Will he be moved now, or will he be moved towards the draft or in the summer? Will he be moved at all? I mean, there's a possibility that he isn't moved at all. I think he will be moved personally, but we've been talking about Kevin Shattenkirk for about a month now, if not longer, and it makes sense because he's a pending UFA. You lost David Backes, mm-hmm. so Doug Armstrong can't afford to lose Kevin Shattenkirk. So you wonder, you know, you mentioned New York, Washington. He could be a rental for them, right? Just because you trade for Kevin Shattenkirk doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to sign him long-term. So what do you give up for a guy that you know is going to be a rental? I agree. The Columbus Blue Jackets, I don't think, are going to be a team that makes a major move. If anything, it's picking up a depth forward or a depth defenseman. Scott Hartnell has been dealing with a bit of an injury. So he's a guy that they expect to be healthy. So they get a bit of a addition getting Scott Hartnell back. But you know, this is a pretty solid team, and they're a young team. And, you know, we know how good Zach Werenski has been in his rookie year, Seth Jones and Ryan Murray. I mean, I don't see them going after a guy like a Kevin Shattenkirk. So if anything, they're getting a guy that might be a rental, but more of a depth rental. So, yeah, Jerome Iginla is probably going to get traded. Shane Doan might get traded. But I agree with what Amanda Steyn said, and I agree with what we were talking about with David Alter. I mean, Toronto, everybody's expecting a big move. How many big moves do we see anymore, Drew? We just don't see them.
No, you just don't. In Detroit, the Red Wings are going to be sellers for the first time in 25 years, as it's fairly evident they're not going to make the playoffs. They got guys like Thomas Vanek and Brendan Smith, who are coming on expiring contracts. Steve Ott as well, if you really want a depth veteran forward. You know, Vanek is an interesting name. You know what he brings to the table. He's very streaky. He's actually had a pretty decent year in Detroit. But Vanek himself, you know, for a team that's looking for a boost of offense, might be a guy who garners some interest come March the 1st.
I think Craig Custin's talked about Vanek and how it's unfortunate, the situation for him, because he really is liking living in Detroit and how he's settled there quite comfortably. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely a piece that could be added. I mean, Minnesota definitely, you know, is maybe regretting the addition of him a few years back. But he's not a big name anymore, right? I mean, he is what he is. You can add him.
He's been good for Detroit, though, this year.
No, he's been solid. But I'm just saying, like, he's not, you know, like, when we're talking about guys like Duchene and Landeskog, like, those are the big names that were being mentioned earlier.
Right.
I just see these as, like, ancillary.
Short-term fix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vanek is a short-term fix.
Yeah.
A team acquiring Matt Duchene is getting a elite center/winger. I mean, Duchene, if you're acquiring Duchene, I mean, you're going to have to give up a lot more than you'd have to give up for Thomas Vanek. You don't have to give up a prospect, a first rounder, and a roster player.
You give up a draft pick for Thomas Vanek.
Sure.
It's going to cost, and you're getting a guy who can play in your top nine.
There's going to be a lot of teams that want Vanek.
You know what? Vanek, because he's a guy who can put up points. He's a guy who can provide offense.
You know, to be honest with you, like all this talk of Duchene, I think the team that you may see him go to, if he does go, In this is my prediction in the summer, is the team he played and beat last night, the Carolina Hurricanes. Because, you know, Colorado needs defense. Carolina has a lot of defensive prospects.
You're talking about Duchene here.
What's that? Yeah, I'm talking about Duchene. I'm saying that I could see Duchene ending up in Carolina because they need his scoring. You know, I mean, there is question whether he plays better as a center than as a winger. So how would that work?
But again, it all depends, right? Because if you're talking about Noah Hanifin, I would assume that Ron Francis doesn't want to give Noah Hanifin up. So are you talking about Jake Bean? Like, who are you talking about, right? Because the asking price is so high for these guys.
Yep.
And you know that, Dave. I know that I don't have to tell you that. It's just and you throw in the salary cap, and then you throw in the expansion draft. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think it's going to be a very active trade deadline.
That's what we've been saying all along, and I'd love to be shocked about it. But generally speaking, I don't expect to be. But if it was, that would be a good decision. That would be good for us, as we're going to have a very busy day, of course, here on TSN 1290. Coming up Wednesday, March the 1st, the NHL trade deadline, 10 days away. Let's head to break. When we come back, we address the ESPN big question of the week. They asked players about their thoughts on fighting in the game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The gloves are down.
Maroon.
And it's Patrick Maroon who finally gets his wish as Ian Manning will go. Maroon has the size advantage against the right hand free. Tries to get his right. He got a right hand in. Maroon still hammering, and then Manning caught him with another one. Manning with a right as he tries to fight his way back in this. Now Maroon has the right hand cocked as he's ready to fire. Manning still defensive one out. Maroon catches him in the top of the head with one. Maroon's helmet off. Manning still on. And they wrestle on the ice. Maroon pushing Manning's head down as they hit the ice.
A good battle from earlier this week between Brandon Manning and Patrick Maroon. A lot of bad blood now existing between Manning and the Edmonton Oilers as a result of his comments after the injury to Connor McDavid last season. So they settled it, as they do in the hockey world, by throwing down with some fisticuffs. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Hustler and Lawless following us here on TSN 1290. The ESPN.com big question of the week was, what role does fighting have in the game? They went around and they spoke to about a dozen or so NHL players, and it was sort of unanimous among those players that fighting still has a role in the game. And I know there's a lot of people who aren't going to like to hear that. But it's when it's coming from the quote-unquote horses' mouths, and those are the guys who are playing the game, those are the guys who would be called, you know, who would be required to fight if necessary, it's sort of an interesting point of view to hear straight from them what they think about the role fighting has still in the game.
Yeah, and you know what I liked about this poll, Drew, is that the players that answered the poll, it was a mixture of goaltenders, it was a mixture of forwards, defensemen, it was a mixture of quote-unquote physical players and less physical players, right?
Guys who not, it wasn't just guys who are expected to fight.
Right, so Jeff Skinner's not a fighter, but right. And or neither is Ron Hainsey, but a guy like David Backes is a guy that will drop the gloves every once in a while, and I actually thought Backes's comments were the most interesting, and he said it's obviously less and less frequent, and we all know that fighting is less frequent in the NHL, and he said it would have to take a big event to totally eliminate fighting, because it's something that allows the players to police themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's always interesting when you hear that fighting is, kind of dying in the NHL, because it is, but it still exists, right? So because there's 0.5 less fights per game or whatever it is, I don't think means that it doesn't still have a place in the game. Stage fighting is out. Goons don't exist in the NHL. They're almost non-existent. But it seems like every time you turn on the TV on a given Tuesday night or Wednesday night, it seems like you'll still see a scrap every once in a while. So, you know, for better or for worse, it still exists in the game.
Well, and that's what the players themselves all said. It's like, it's good that the staged fighting is pretty much gone. You know, most, you know, 9 times out of 10, a fight that happens is organic, in that it's two guys who are doing battle, who, you know, get to the point in the battle where they decide that they need to drop the gloves.
We just saw it with Winnipeg and Dallas, Ben Chiarot and Curtis McKenzie.
Sure. Those guys were doing battle in the corner. They were jousting. They were fighting for the puck. They didn't like the reaction from one another, so they decided by dropping the gloves they would, you know, finish the battle in that method. I don't have a problem with it. For a while there, I was sort of on the negative side of it. Like, it's not necessary. It needs to be banned from the league. You know what? These guys all know the risks. Nobody's unaware of the risks anymore. And so if the players themselves, the ones who are taking the risk, are okay with it, why should I, you know, why does my opinion supersede theirs?
Yeah, I mean, my only, I have no problem with Ez and Ezzy's camp. Like, I don't really think much of it. And I think, like, I think if you completely remove it, then the problem is then I think the stick infractions go crazy because I think guys just become – they don't have to worry. There's nothing to answer to, right? So if you can just, you know, stick a guy in the groin or if you can, like, slash him in the back of the legs, and what's the repercussion? Nothing. If that guy knows that he can just, you know, willy-nilly do whatever he wants to anyone in the willy-nilly, then he's got then you've got problems. So – I think that, you know, there is a fair amount – because the reality is, as we all know, the refs can't see everything. And so you have to have some sort of player accountability. Now, you don't want vigilante justice. And the one negative I would say is – and the one thing I can't stand is after a big hit, the need to answer the bell. You know, now I get the idea if it looks like your player's injured, then you want to come to that. You know, like when they saw, for example, Mark Stewart coming to Blake Wheeler's defense, I don't have a problem with because it was a dirty hit by Evgeny Malkin. So if Evgeny Malkin takes out Blake Wheeler, Mark Stewart's immediate reaction when he sees Wheeler lying face down on the ice is, I'm going after Malkin. I like that. I have no problem with that because that's a guy sticking up for his teammate who just got a cheap shot. Now, when Dustin Byfuglien, you know, destroys Stone on that hit, does Dustin Byfuglien need to answer the bell for that hit? You know, I mean, the reality is, who's going to fight Dustin Byfuglien anyways? But you know, I just don't – that's the kind of stuff I don't love when you have to answer the bell for a good hit. But, I mean, overall, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and it's a part of hockey. It just is. It always has been. I think it always will be. And, you know, I can ask this question, and I know the answer to this question. What's a bigger problem in the NHL right now? A fight here and there? Or Gustav Nyquist high-sticking Jared Spurgeon and possibly taking his eye out? To me, that's what the NHL Department of Player Safety should be focusing on and suspending guys more for that type of stuff. Blindside hits from behind. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a way bigger problem than fighting. How often do we actually see injuries from fighting anyways?
Not as often. You don't often see, you know, any knockouts on the ice or anything like
Max
that.
Domi hurt breaking his.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't UFC, Drew. I mean, guys drop the gloves, they punch each other a little bit, and they go off. I mean, yes, and I realize that, you know, there are evidence that, you know, continued fighting can have an impact on the brain. But I
refuse to believe that, you know, continued body checking also doesn't have an effect on the brain. So it is a fine line to what you're speaking about, and like I said, from the you know, with my opinion earlier, these guys know the risks.
Right.
They take the risks. They, you know, if the players didn't want there to be fighting in the league,
right,
there would not be fighting in the league. They would make it clear, because from the NHL ownership perspective, if you want to consider, you know, lawsuits and that sort of thing, I think the owners themselves probably wouldn't mind seeing fighting out of the game, because, you know, well, then maybe they, you know, avoid potential of lawsuits for CTE down the road or anything. But the players haven't pushed that issue. The players haven't said, we need this to be out of the game. The players would be the ones responsible for taking the lead to removing fighting. And until they do that, I'm okay with fighting staying around.
Yeah, and again, you know, because players answered a poll using their names, sometimes you wonder, are they actually saying what they're thinking, or are they kind of saying what is the expectation of them to say? So if you take it on its face, and, you know, we talked to Scott Burnside last week about the idea of fighting in hockey because he had spoken to the players. It was fresh at that point. And, you know, he wasn't surprised, really. And having said that, and having read the article, neither am I.
Quick update from Toronto. We know that the Jets are going to be into Toronto on Tuesday. Mitch Marner officially out tonight against Ottawa, also out tomorrow in Carolina. So no Mitch Marner for the Leafs on
this
weekend, which is what we expected. Not yet sure about his status for Tuesday night against the Winnipeg Jets.
It's more opportunity for Patrick Laine to pick up some points.
Or Laine versus Matthews might have the spotlight all to themselves and not have to share it with Mitch Marner on Tuesday night. Of course, the Jets in action this afternoon in Montreal against the Habs. That game is a 1 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to our guests, Amanda Stein out of Montreal, David Alter in Toronto, Dean Brown in Ottawa, and Ted Wyman with the Winnipeg Sun. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. facebook.com/illegalcurve. And as I said, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Rory doing a great job behind the board, big props to him. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be